This is Sports Jam, and I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is Jed Tumenaro, the coordinating producer for the MLB Network and the director, yet once again, of the official World Series film, the 2020 World Series battle between the LA Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays. It was a good World Series. It was a different World Series because of COVID, but nonetheless, exciting and big and emotional. That's what we're going to talk about on this edition of Sports Jam. Jed has this magic touch of capturing the emotion of the World Series. Thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Big challenges that were ahead of you facing this, but yet you were able to turn this all around and really provide an unbelievable 2020 World Series film that showed the emotion of the LA Dodgers, especially winning the World Series. People like Clayton Kershaw, who really accepted the fact that his career wasn't everything maybe he wanted it to be when it came to the big game.
Yeah, I've failed a lot. I've had some success too. And just to be able to have another opportunity to do it. I mean, how many guys get to do that? I mean, how many teams get to be here 3 out of 4 times, you know? And like, I'm not afraid of it, you know? And honestly, I'm just grateful. I really am. I'm grateful that I get another chance at it. There's not many people that get this opportunity to fail or succeed as many times as I do.
Talk about the access. Now, you had a situation where a lot of media wasn't there, and therefore you had special shots that you could get around. So going into this and coming out of it, obviously you had to be pleased with the end result.
Yeah, I think we really were. And that's a great point that you made. Going into it, you know, no one knew what to expect because it's such new territory. And we were certainly a little bit, you know, concerned or wary that we weren't going to be getting some of the things we normally get in a typical year. Maybe that's off the field access and ride-alongs to the park with players. Sometimes we've done stuff in players' homes the night before games. Things like that we knew were going to be restricted. But at the same time, to your point, which we really saw immediately, was how much less of a media presence there was, which was understandable. So in certain ways, we felt like we got a more intimate look at certain things. And you'll see, like in the film, a lot of times, like the way the players, there wasn't clubhouse access that we've been used to for years and years and years. So there was a lot of things like press conferences and things like that where we were the only cameras in the room. So there were certain situations where I think we were still able to capture an up close feel, a unique feel that only we were able to get. So there certainly were some challenges, but some advantages along the way as well.
There's a lot of people that could direct this film, but Major League Baseball Network chooses you. You've been a part of Major League Baseball for more than 20 years now, working for MLB Productions and then working for MLB Network. What is the specific eye of Jed Tumenaro that MLB likes?
Well, I think it's mostly, you know, I'm lucky that I have a really good staff. I've got great field producers that have been doing this for years. We have great camera crews that have been documenting these World Series for years, long before I came on to even do this. Same thing with editors. So I think it's more of, you know, our team. We know how to do it. We're around it all year long. So I think that helps. You know, you have familiarity with the players, with the coaching staffs, with the PR staffs, and just the sport and knowing how to do it. You know, there's a lot of great people that know how to produce and direct and are storytellers and great at their art form. But I do think it would be challenging to just parachute in to cover an event where you're not familiar with the game, the angles, where to be, where to, you know, how to direct. Sort of same thing with live events as well. I'm sure that a lot of the producers and directors that do that, it's the same thing. It's a familiarity and a repetitive nature and a knowledge of the sport. And I think that's why, you know, we're a good fit for this and hopefully it shows.
You've been a part of World Series films for a lot longer than you've been directing, but your first directorial was the Mets and the Royals in 2015. Each World Series has its own memorable moments, but this one starts off with a memorable moment just for the fact of the condition. So I don't think anybody will forget the 2020 World Series, and it has your stamp on it.
Yeah, and that's what we wanted to do with the open of this film. Like, you know, most of them start, they all start unique, but a lot of times the backbone of it, like most championship films from all sports, you know, the backbone is still great imagery and powerful music and really good script if there's voiceover in it. One thing we wanted to do this year, and which was really important, was let's not run from how this looks. Like we felt like we shouldn't look back on this film in a year or 5 years or 10 years and not realize how different it looks. It should look like that. It should feel different because every picture you see from 2020, everything you see is going to look different years from now. You might have to explain to some people, why did it look like that? Why did it feel like that? So that was important to us for the open, to actually showcase, like, let's look at this. Let's look at an empty press conference room. Let's look at people in masks, a stadium that's, you know, only 10 to 15% capacity, and just capture how it is. And once the game started, I feel like that's when a sense of normalcy sort of took over. The players are still in their positions. The drama was still there. A lot of the same things you see in a series is still present. But I think it was a lot of the imagery before and after games that really kind of looked different. And we wanted to capture that and show that.
Whether or not his postseason legacy was at stake, Kershaw's task in game one would begin with Rays first baseman Yandy Diaz.
Dodgers fans and baseball fans, they love Vin Scully. You got him back here to do the narration and the incredible writing of Aaron Cohen, who's been a guest here on Sports Jam. In fact, most recently wrote for a documentary that we had talking about Hector Macho Camacho. So we know he's the best in the biz. And as you mentioned, you work with a great crew. But to write for Vin Scully and to direct for Vin Scully had to be a real thrill for you.
It was a real thrill. And we've been fortunate enough to have some really good voices on these films. But this was like such a treat. And as you said, for me, and I'm personally speaking, it was really, really easy because you have the voice of Vin Scully. You have the writing, as you said, of Aaron Cohen. There's almost not, I mean, I can't do anything to get in the way of that, but just let them do their thing. And Scully was great. And it was really, you know, I can't think of another scenario where you can have such a voice that was there for every one of the team's championships. I mean, you have to have a combination of incredible longevity and to be great at your craft. And that's a rare combination to have. So to have his voice on this film as someone who has seen it all, every one of their championships, all their Hall of Famers, all their great moments, it was a real treat to have him do that.
Did you two have a conversation of note that you want to share with us?
This is such a self-serving thing. Not much at all, but it was pretty cool that, and I told this, I haven't said this to anyone other than like, I think maybe family, but when we started, I think I had just welcomed him in and did the, you know, your standard, hello, Mr. Scully, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. And he just chimed in really quick and said, Jed, I'm just going to have to ask you one thing for you to call me Vinny. And that was really cool. And it's such a little self-serving story. And I know that it is, but that was a pretty cool thing. After that, we just kind of went and it was a very quick session. He's such a pro, still on the top of his game. Didn't change much, but that one little 20-second exchange will always stand out to me.
You know, I guess it's just the way these iconic broadcasters are. They know how to work with people. Of course, Vin always had those, you know, would do games by himself for the most part at various times. It's wonderful to hear that, you know, first of all, that means a sense of trust in you too. Call me Vinny. I mean, other than my cousin Vinny, I don't know any other, you know, Vinny references. So that's really special and not self-serving at all, Jed, because those are the kind of things we want to hear here on Sports Jam. Jed Tumanara is our guest, the coordinating producer for the MLB Network and the director of the official 2020 World Series film. Clayton Kershaw, to me, you need great characters to have a great story. And he's a great character. He's humble, he's terrific, and he's honest. What more can you want?
Yeah, and you know, we've done this film, I think it was, we did it in 18, we did it in 17, both of the times the Dodgers were on the losing side. And you know, Kershaw has always kind of been his narrative, had some struggles in those series, but you do need the character and you do need him to be open and honest. And I think you'll see that right up top in this film. He does a the press conference on Media Day. And he's asked very candidly about his struggles. And he easily could have just said, well, you know, I'm just going out there, take it one pitch at a time, you know, but he spoke about it. He said, I've had good games in October and I've had a lot of bad ones, but I'll settle to be in this situation all the time. And I think that was a really open answer. And I also noticed, and this is just my assessment and it could be totally wrong, but it did seem that he sort of, and you alluded to this in the open, that he was maybe a little more, I don't know if it's how many more of these am I going to get, or I don't know if there's a, well, I didn't even think we'd be here the way this year was unfolding. Whatever it was, I think I noticed a little more from afar of just a taking it all in a bit. Not one shred of competitive edge wasn't there. I mean, that is the same as always, but just maybe a little more openness, you know, maybe with our cameras. I even remember on the Fox broadcast, I believe he wore an in-game mic, which is something that really stood out to me. And those are things I don't know, but I don't think I would have seen that in years past from him.
Was it your work in the field of communications at the State University of New York College at Cortland? Was it your time at ESPN? Was it your time at MLB Productions? Or was it your time at MLB Network that you really feel that you learned your craft? You already know that emotion is what takes us all in. It brings us in and it keeps us there.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, every place you mentioned shaped that. You know, I think at ESPN, I was so young and just trying to learn production in general, but it was really probably MLB Productions, which was the training ground. I had been on, you know, this film and a lot of other projects, not in this role, but just as a production assistant, as an editor, as an associate producer. And I think you just learn. You learn from really good people and you sort of learn the craft. But like anything, you don't, you know, it's really have to just kind of do it. My first one in this role was the Royals-Mets World Series, as you mentioned. And there are just things that you're not familiar with and, you know, simple things that seem second nature, where to be, where to have your crews, how to react to something, how to, you know, requests to make up a team and what's going to be a long week, you know, when to put those in, just all that stuff goes into it. So I think all those places certainly laid the foundation, but it was probably first and foremost the years at MLB Productions where you got the first hands-on experience doing this.
Working in a major network where you see all the games, do you still have allegiance to a certain squad?
I mean, I grew up a very hardcore Yankee fan, grew up in Staten Island, New York. And, you know, as it goes on and you work in it, you know, as you sort of pull for things that sort of help you or the business or your team or whatever. But yeah, I think I'll always still be, you know, I still root for the Yankees. They're still the team that when I'm not working and I'm home, I watch and pull for. But it is interesting how the tug goes, how like the more you work in it, other things just take over. But yeah, if at this point, after almost 20 years working in the industry, I still have an allegiance to them, I don't think that's ever going to go away.
You know, one thing that I just learned before we did this interview that gives me great respect for your work is the fact that a lot of people would think Jed Tumminaro played baseball, played college, maybe even had a chance to make the majors or is in the minors because he's directing the World Series film for everyone. But that wasn't the case for you. You played just a little bit of baseball, and yet once you got into, you know, MLB Productions, you took this game under your wing and, you know, you've embraced it ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I just had a pretty accurate self-awareness assessment when I was younger. Like I loved playing all recreational sports, you know, just lived it every day out in the street playing with all my friends and then Little League like most kids do. But whereas most kids, you know, their dream is to be a Major League Baseball player until a certain age, I think I knew like really early on, I would watch guys like, you know, whether it was Bob Costas or Al Michaels or those kinds of guys and be like, I think that's where I wanted to go, which was to be a broadcaster, which was actually to be on air and be a broadcaster. And that even as I got into school and into production, I sort of then went to the behind the scenes production route. But that's kind of how I knew I always wanted to be in sports. Like I never had a backup plan. I never had anything else that I thought I would do. But I sort of also knew very early on that it was going to have to be either in front of the camera, behind the camera, in a control room or something like that to be part of it.
Having 10 and 13 year old boys who are interested in baseball, and your 10-year-old you mentioned before we started is still playing the game very much. Have you put together any films for them, just for family? Your home movies must be incredible.
They should be. They should be, keyword being should, because I'm embarrassed to say I don't have a whole lot. I do have photos. I take a lot of pictures, and I do have that. But with all that I, you know, have done, like, you know, the amount of time I've spent in front of, you know, edit bays or in edit suites and doing all that stuff, I have not really done that with them. I guess most of the time when I'm at their games or watching, I'm still sort of caught up in it and I'm not really there filming it or taking pictures or doing much. I'm still just kind of there watching, probably as a fan / nervous parent.
That makes perfect sense, Jed, because there's lots of time for that. And, you know, a lot of times we see people at concerts and I just enjoy just instead of taking all the photos and, you know, and the video, just enjoy it because you're only going to get one chance to see it live, you know, and then you can always find somebody else's capturing it. Mm-hmm. When this film comes to an end, as I mentioned, every World Series has a moment. And of course, the Tampa Bay Rays amazing victory in game four, that in itself could be a whole film because of the drama in it. But it certainly helped the 2020 World Series, didn't it?
It was incredible. And you get that sometimes where I think it was 2018 when the Red Sox won, I think it was in five games, game three, which was that marathon 18 inning game, was almost this like the pinnacle moment. And it happened sometimes where, you know, it came from maybe the team that didn't win, but that game four was incredible. I mean, you know, you hope you have something like that, you know, you hope you can, not like that. That's a one in how, I don't know how many years, but you just hope you have these moments of drama, these things, these moments of the next day. That's all everybody's talking about. And it happened. And I still think, you know, all sports can give you that. Maybe it's my love of baseball, but I still think baseball is the one that, you know, to me stands out as really provides the backdrop for that, where it's the least likeliest of heroes. You know, there's no clock. So it's a scenario that maybe as little as 5 minutes prior, you couldn't see coming, you know, from who was the, you know, the hero to how it all unfolded. And it was great drama. And I think that what really stood out to me was one question I had, even from earlier in the season, when they announced the framework for the 60 game season and the postseason, I was very happy, of course, for a lot of reasons, but I didn't know, you know, once we get there, like, how would it feel? Would it feel the same? Would it feel like a World Series? Would it feel dramatic? Would it feel exciting? Would we say, all right, you know, at least we tried it. And I thought the World Series from the minute it started felt like a World Series, but none more so than when that game four, and especially the ending of that game four, unfolded.
And the pitch, a swing and a ball lined into right center, a base hit. Kiermaier around third. It's booted by Taylor. A Rosarena coming home, and now he's caught. And now Smith drops the ball, and a Rosarena scores. Smith had the ball. At the plate, they had a Rosarena caught, and he lost the ball. It dropped out of his mitt, and somehow, miraculously, the Rays have won the game.
It's amazing the Dodgers were able to lose that game and come back. Really a testament to guys like Mookie Betts and Corey Seager and Clayton Kershaw and the rest of the Dodgers, and to come back and win that World Series. Because when you watch that again, you go, huh, if there's momentum, the Tampa Bay Rays are certainly moving on.
No doubt. And the Dodgers, because they've had, you know, an incredible 7 or 8 year run, but it's been defined to some extent by not being able to win in, you know, the big one, or maybe having some of these tough losses. And I don't know, a lot of people, I think maybe here we go again. You know, that was, you know, it's 2-2, it's a best of three, but they had all the momentum and, you know, the way that game unfolded. But you're right, it is a testament. I think when you win a championship, it's, unless you're just one of those teams that you get them every now and then is so dominant, usually you have to have a strong sense of resiliency, overcome some stuff. And it was a testament because they came right back the next day and, you know, did what they had to do. They scored early and they won the next two games. But you're right. I mean, for at least that night and the next day, it really seemed like the whole momentum of the series and the win probability and all that had shifted.
This may seem a bit tedious to you, but I think listeners and viewers like to know, the director of a film like this, can you take us through just maybe one day of what your job consists of, putting this, you have all this footage together, less footage than you've had in the past because of COVID, and less camera crew, but still more access in some ways. Take us through one day.
Yeah, it still is an inordinate amount of footage. And really, like an average World Series day, this year, like you said, was different because you didn't have some of the access stuff that you may or may not get. But, you know, you have, I mean, like you said, it could be a little tedious, but just to rip through it, like, you know, if you have a first pitch at, let's say, 8:08 East Coast time, which is what it usually is, you know, your day begins 10 or 11 a.m. You know, usually you get to the stadium with your crews and you're shooting, you know, documenting some stuff in and around the park. It could be scenery. It could be just some miscellaneous imagery. Players start rolling in a couple hours later. I mean, by the time that game starts, you've usually had, you know, about a 10-hour day just getting everything you need to get beforehand. Interviews, press conferences, batting practice, access scenes. And then you're all over the game for 3 or 4 hours. You cover your post game. A typical day wraps maybe, you know, around midnight, a little after, by the time you do all your post-game stuff. And then, you know, that wraps up the shooting of the game. And then the whole second process, that's on site, is back in our studios in Secaucus, where you have people going all day long, taking that footage in throughout the night. It could begin around noon, that day, and the last piece of footage you get in could be 2-3 in the morning, and then your editors are going. So it seems, you know, that's a lot of inside production type of stuff, but the whole day from soup to nuts, all different people, the same person maybe isn't doing a 16 or 17 hour day, but it probably begins around 10 in the morning and wraps maybe about 2 or 3 in the morning from site into our studios. And then that's the process for this film that continues for about 10 days until we deliver it.
It's a lot of work. Jed, was MLB Network hoping the Yankees would get in for a Yankees-Dodgers World Series?
You know, it's funny. Everyone has different interests and stuff. I think for you know, the always networks itself, maybe not MLB Network, maybe the broadcast networks that have the rights to the World Series. I can't speak for them, but I'm sure the Foxes and the same thing goes for TBS and all sports. I'm sure they want big markets and with huge followings and stuff. But the Rays were also a phenomenal story. And I think they captivated everybody, if not for the, maybe not during the 60 game season, because it's a regional game, but certainly in the postseason with their win over the Yankees and then that great series they had against the Astros. And I think once you're in the World Series, you're happy and you just hope it's a good series. I think, you know, a long series, some back and forth, teams splitting the first two games, which usually means you're settling in for a little bit. And this World Series provided all of that. I mean, short of it going 7 games, I think it kind of gave everything you could want in a series.
It certainly did. And what's sad about when you lose the World Series, as the years go on, people forget you were even in the World Series. And the Rays had some unbelievable stars, and including that Game 4, where you have these no-name players getting big hits and really the highlight of their career. But we will forget about the Rays maybe, but maybe not, because of 2020 and COVID. You know, you also, you've done so many productions. You've won awards for producing and directing all these World Series films. I want to talk briefly, because this guy played for the Newark Bears for a short period of time, and you did a whole documentary on the amazing Ricky Henderson. It was called School of Ricky.
Hall of Famer, big-time record breaker, sure. But never forget, Ricky Henderson was a trailblazer. Not so much for what he accomplished, but for what he taught a whole generation about real style.
It was in 79 when he broke in. I said, who is this guy, right?
He brought a style. He brought the word they use now, swag.
I mean, from the snatching the ball out the air.
Henderson back. He has it.
You know, flip the bat.
Ricky Henderson. He is a force.
I'm letting them know, yeah, I got you. I used to do all that stuff.
Ricky Henderson is full of substance. There's the substance, and here comes the style.
How much fun was it to do School of Ricky?
It was fun because it was a different style of approach. You know, Ricky Henderson, like I grew up watching Ricky Henderson, and he obviously did things that maybe aren't as pertinent in day-to-day game today, but I think that he was such a unique character. And the reason why it was fun, at least for us, is that usually you do a documentary on a great player and you look back at the career, and that's enough. That's a good enough reason to do it. But at the time we did Ricky, which was reflected in the title, sort of the way he played, the style he played, was a hot button topic. It's you have this old school, new school. Should you show style? Should you show emotion? The way you play, you know, what is the right way or the wrong way to play? And Ricky and a lot of people were saying, well, there's this new school approach. And the point of that title was, it's not really new school. Guys did it back in the day. You know, Reggie Jackson had flair. Willie Mays had it. But Ricky may have been the biggest one. And the thing about Ricky, it's a little bit maybe like Bo Jackson to some extent, maybe a Dion, is that a lot of young players, when you ask them who they grew up, like who they idolized, they pick players that were from when they were kids. So you might ask a Bryce Harper, or, you know, I'm getting old now, but you talk to some of the young players and the guys they loved were like guys in the late 90s, early 2000s. Surprisingly, Ricky is a guy that a lot of them really talk about. And I don't, you know, they clearly, a lot of them weren't born when he was playing, but maybe they've seen footage of him. Maybe they've seen videos of him. They love his play. So I think he's one of those players that transcends generations a little bit. And even if people didn't see him firsthand, they kind of emulate him and take to his style. So it was fun doing that because it was a documentary on a guy that, you know, played and his career was done, but it felt very much topical and relevant to what was going on when we were doing that, I believe, in 2016.
Yeah, his uniqueness as a base stealer and be able to hit home runs and a leadoff batter, you know, certainly makes him one of the greatest of all times. And I don't think the people in Newark appreciated the fact that he was playing for the Newark Bears for a little bit. It's like, come out and see this guy, because he was unbelievable. Of course, the Bears are now now defunct. But looking at your career, with when it comes to documentaries and putting together this 2020 World Series film, what do you enjoy most? Do you enjoy putting together this type of film or a doc?
I like them both. I've always been myself. Like this is there's an excitement and an exhilaration with doing something like this that nothing really can compare to, because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you're sitting there every night and you just don't know. You don't even know. It's not that you don't know before the game. As we were talking about in game four, you sometimes don't know 5 minutes before. And then the rush of trying to put it together quickly. You know, I've been in post-production most of my life, not really in live TV, but this is, for us and what we do, this is as close to it as you get, because it is live. You're documenting it all in real time. You're putting it together very quickly. So for a week or two or three, nothing beats doing a project like this. But overall, I've always been a documentary guy. I love doing long form storytelling, getting to know people. You know, still the biggest thrill for me is, you know, whether it's going to someone's home or picking a location and just doing like a long form interview and getting to get stories out of them and figuring out how you're going to put that all together. That has always been what I've gravitated to the most. And it's still, after all these years, the thing that I like doing the most.
You get to pick and choose. You can go back in time too, if you want. Who would be the person you would want to document in the sports world that you haven't had a chance to deal with?
I would love to do and I'm sticking solely with baseball now. Sandy Koufax, who I've been, you know, part of baseball for 20 years and have done close to nothing with Sandy. You know, he's by all accounts a great person and a great, he's just not, you know, he doesn't do much with media. The career is remarkable on every level, with how good he was, how short of a time it was. He's still a figure around, you know, very much around the Dodgers. So he'd be one that I would love to do. If I can go back in time, certainly if Jackie Robinson, and I know there's been a lot done on Jackie and it uses a lot of sound and film of him, but obviously it was all after the fact. So that would be one. Those two really stand out. I'm sure there's a bunch of others, but just at first thought, those two stand out to me.
You mentioned during this interview that you wanted to be a broadcaster. You really are, Jed, because what you're doing is you're telling all the stories through pictures. And if you had to, I'm sure that you would be terrific at just capsulizing it yourself. You just have the ability to go to a Vin Scully and to Aaron Cohen and say, hey, do this work. But I'm sure you could put this together, you know, just like yourself, really doing an outstanding job. So if somebody comes up to Jed Tumanaro and says, 2020 World Series, that was nuts. You have like one or two sentences for them. How do you describe your experience?
That's a great question. I would say it was very unique. It was very unique, but it shows that if you're willing to adapt and adjust and find new ways to tell a story and document a story, it can be done. You know, we still needed a great series, of course, to happen, but you can kind of throw out a lot of your playbook and just be willing to just find new ways to do something. And I'm sure that's true in almost in a lot of professions, but certainly with this.
So kind of it's made you even better, right? For next year's 2021 World Series, there are new things you've learned. And even if there isn't a COVID scare, you could incorporate.
You know what we said afterwards to that point? A few of us were talking that worked on it. And we said, for a million reasons, we hope we're not in this scenario again next year, for the obvious reasons. But what, to your point, we did say that, like, there are things that, you know, you're forced to adjust and do things a certain way that if we weren't forced to, we probably wouldn't have. Some of that was creative with ways to edit something or document a press conference. Some of it was just how you manage your time, how you manage your time and your resources. You know, if you're working with a lot more resources and a bigger net to, you know, you're going to use all that, which makes sense. But if you have less time, less resources, less ways to do something, you're just forced to think and react a certain way that until you're made to do that, maybe you wouldn't have.
Now in the role as a father and husband, what conversation have you had with your 10 and 13 year old sons about COVID? Because I'm sure they've had plenty of questions for you.
Yeah, they're in an interesting age for it because they totally understand what's going on. They haven't had to make, you know, we're lucky, a ton of sacrifices, but there's still, for kids, there are still a lot of sacrifices. And just that we're all kind of learning it and going through it really together. You know, in the beginning, I think there were a lot of questions like, how long is this going to be and all that, of course, which we couldn't answer. And I think now we've been in it so long that they've done a really good job just being like, we're in this. We don't know what the timetable is, what we're asked to do. And that could be for them as simple as, you know, how they have to adjust in school or putting on a mask or whatever. But they've been really, really good with it. And I think they get at their age that, like, I don't have really answers. Like, I think if they were younger, it'd be like, why can't we do this? And why can't we do that? And how long? I think they understand that this is new for me, like it's new for them. And they're not going to really get any sort of relief or closure or answers from us. So we've just talked about stuff like that. And that's really it. We've been lucky in that they've been really good adjusting to it.
You've been giving all the answers, not only in this 2-disc Blu-ray and DVD combo pack and DVD available for purchase and download this past month. And now you have the World Series Collector's Edition coming out in February. What, obviously Dodger fans are going to eat that all up, but how much more work does that entail for you?
It's not a ton more work because a lot of that is full games and you're cutting stuff down. So it really isn't, I mean, that kind of, and we can sort of tend to that a little bit after we've got the body of the film down. So it's not really that much more. And you're right. Like for me, I'm still a junkie with all that stuff. I know when my team wins like a championship or something, which has kind of been a while now with all my sports, but I'm someone that like will literally go watch the game again on DVR. I'll watch all the moments again. So I think for the fans that of the winning team, I still like that. You know, the film gives you one thing, is it gives you the drama and emotion. And it's like, it's watching a movie of the event, but I'm someone that still like will watch an entire game play out just to relive a big win. So I think that it's a good compliment to the film.
Kind of the same way. I've only been to one World Series game in my life. It was 1971 in Pittsburgh, game 5, the Pirates going up against the Orioles, and Nellie Bryles, 2-hitter. And I watched it just a couple of days ago, the full game, and said, wow, I was there. I was 9 years old, Jed, when that game was going on. But still, you could see Roberto Clemente playing and my favorite player of all time, Manny Sanguin. It brought back the thrills. Baseball does that, right? When they see this 2020 World Series film in future years, it's going to be a special year because of COVID. You're part of history. That's very special. Congratulations on another successful film.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, for all of us that worked on it, you know, we were such a small part of what was going on out there, very small, but we all kind of know that, you know, it was something to be part of. You know, hopefully we do a lot more of these. Hopefully they're not like this one, but we'll always kind of remember this one and know that it was unique. It was unique. It was special. I'm glad that, you know, we were able to be part of it and that baseball, you know, pulled it off. I think that, you know, there was so much, which is natural, trepidation and, you know, doubt and concern whether this thing would even the season, let alone a postseason and a World Series, would ever find its way to completion. And when it was, I think we were all sort of both relieved and kind of, you know, in our own way, proud to be a small part of it.
Is it a foregone conclusion that you're going to do the 2021 World Series?
You know, if there's one thing I've learned about this past year is that nothing is a foregone conclusion with anything. But I hope that is the case for a lot of reasons. But yes, I hope that that I'll be back in the same exact role next year.
Well, I'm sure New York fans are hoping that it would be a Mets-Yankees World Series and maybe take you back to, you know, 2015 for you and the Mets and Royals, even though you're a Yankees fan. Still having that New York excitement built around you would make it even more special. Well, the best of success to you moving on here. Thank you. Health and happiness during the holiday period for your wife and your kids. And thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes or on the NPR list of podcasts. Until our next Sports Jam session, and in 2021, I hope to see you at the game.